case. You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain, Secret of the Sailor Madness, and UK Anime Network podcast. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Elliot.
Hello.
Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
It's JoJo style.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, Goodbye Morio, The Heart of Gold, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, episode 39, the final part of Diamond is Unbreakable, where we join exactly where we left off, with Kira being cussed out by a small child.
He wanted to get his head caved in.
That was my thought as well, Niall. I kind of wanted them all to break out into a football chant.
Is everybody just kind of crowd here, or just give him a good kicking when he's on the ground, right in the ribs?
Who cares if the ambulance is there? It'll be worth being arrested.
The magical ambulance which appeared out of nowhere to immediately set up like a whole new drama.
Yeah. Well, they're all acting like, I assume, from their point of view, there's been several explosions downtown. Must be a gas leak.
Oh, there's these two injured men. One of them says he's not involved in this incident.
Even though he has shit sticking out of his arms and legs and shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he gets approached by the paramedic and says, "Are you one of the injured people?"
Dude, he's profusely bleeding.
He's got like the parts of a banister of stairs protruding out of his body. You're like, what do you think is going to happen here, Mr. Train, for how many years in medical school to get to your job?
Yeah, you only know if they're injured if you ask them first, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a JoJo pose that's involuntary this time. Like, he didn't even ask to be in that pose, but his injuries forced him into it.
His broken bones, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that paramedic lady was, like, operating on a whole nother level of shonen power where everyone else was frozen while she actually got to do stuff. It's like robot transforming, except medical emergencies, I guess.
Yes, so the crux of this is that Kira is attended to by a paramedic who he then flirts with and...
Well, you say flirt. But...
Flirt? Well, for him it is.
It is, yes.
Yeah. I guess it's his stages of how he treats it, most of his inverted commas lovers.
He was very romantic in a very particular laser-pointed Mona Lisa-defiling manner.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Hayato's like, oh my god, he's going to use that other power that he used on me, which apparently only works on people who don't have stand powers. You've got to stop him. It reverses time.
Yeah, he had to explain a lot very quickly.
Yes.
I think he did a good job, though, for a kid.
Oh, yeah, especially.
Yes. It kind of, it also explained why that power hadn't been used against the other guys directly.
The sort of post-fact, oh, we better tidy this up a bit so people don't send us angry letters.
There's a joker about that in this week's Haybot, where someone explains that this power, which has never been seen before in the previous 13 episodes, was in the story Bible right from the start.
Oh, dear.
You gotta read the supplementary interviews in all the magazines. Otherwise, you'll never know what's going on.
Yeah, so they're in a rush to try and stop him reversing time, and he manages to do it. He's like, here I am, back in time, going to work. Nothing has gone wrong at all.
I feel like we have to quickly like jump back and say that there was a pretty good sort of weird bit where they're trying to synergize their powers together to try and stop him from activating it.
I did like Jotaro's thing where he has concentric circles drawn around him to show his range.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like a strategy, it's like a strategy RPG suddenly. It was like, okay, we're now... And also, as soon as that happened, I'm like, hey, you've got a guy who can erase space. Maybe he should pitch in a wee bit or something.
Put a leg on Jotaro. Go in there and stop time. I can't. He's a little too far away from me. Well, get in there, you lazy shit.
Stop time here. Step forward a little, and then if you need to stop time again, there appears to be no limitation to your power.
It was pretty good to have Koichi there, like, literally on Jotaro's coattails, though. Like, I kind of enjoyed that of, like, he's around. That's cool. If only because you got to watch Kira pulling an even more silly pose as his hand is imploded. The beatdown was very satisfying, though.
Oh, but before we get to the beatdown, we have him thinking that he's survived and he's going to work. And then he's like, hang on, this isn't the route I normally take to work. What's going on?
Well, no, he gets beaten down, but then he manages to activate Bites of Dust and thinks he's safe, maybe.
Now, I thought he doesn't get beaten down.
No.
He's beaten up.
There's a cut to...
In the order of things that we see, he seems to get away first.
Yes, but I was going to say, we don't see the beatdown until after.
Sorry, my bad.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. Yeah. It's kind of confusing because it jumps forward and he's forgotten because he assumes he's won. And then it's like, oh, let me remind you of how you got your ass handed to you.
Yes.
Yeah. It's sort of like while time was stopped, he was beaten with such force he probably, you know, was clinically brain dead before the truck backed over him.
He was dead before time even started again.
Yes. So we as the viewer think that, maybe think the same as Kira, that he's traveled back in time, but we recognize the backgrounds.
And we also recognize the fact that if his powers did work, he wouldn't have realized he traveled back in time.
Yes.
Yeah. We, know this railing. We know this pile of dog shit over here. We know
all this stuff. I was actually really sad they didn't show the dog shit. They showed the post box, but not the dog
I thought
shit.
He was going to step in it just because fuck that guy.
Yeah, that would have been great. But like he does the whole slow dawning realization where he goes, oh, I shall check the time because it should be back in time as I'm on my way to work. Oh, what, my watch is still broken. Why is my watch broken? Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. And I guess one of the few heroines in the show shows up and is like, remember me, motherfucker? a pretty satisfying thing, yeah.
And proves that he's a ghost by sticking her arm through him.
Really freaking him out. Yes. Unsurprisingly, yeah.
And then he remembers what happened. And then we see him get the shit kicked out of him.
Ah, yeah. It was nice to see George Arrow, just bust out some of the old classics there.
Yeah, it would have nearly felt like cheap of like Jotaro finishing him off. It wasn't for the fact that he couldn't have even done it without Koichi, whom he thanked while time was stopped.
Yes.
So Koichi will never know that Jotaro respected him as a man.
So yeah, Koichi uses the power to increase the weight of his hand again, crushing his hand again.
Yeah, so he can't set off the detonator on
which
on the doctor.
Gives the running Jotaro enough time to get close enough to use Star Platinum to beat the living shit out of him.
First of all, he makes sure to crush his hand so it's completely inoperable, and then they get Aurora.
Yeah, and also Rohan was there.
Yeah, he was there to pull silly poses and hold his little sketchbook thing. I feel like the best bit about the Jotaro beatdown was how measured it was. Like, he sort of takes a calm breath and he sort of evaluates the situation before annihilating the guy, like, really comprehensively.
He's been doing this for years. It's kind of like, okay, let me just see. I think I'll wreck him this way. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Also, he has the time to do it now.
That's true. He's the time to take a little break before he gets stuck into it. It's pretty good. Like everyone's powers get involved in the defeating of Kira, except for obviously the kid.
Hayato.
Hayato. Obviously who doesn't have powers, and Rohan, who was just using his creepy fucking walking around taking pictures of everyone ability, which isn't really a power. But yeah, it's nice that everyone kind of was involved in him being taken down.
Mm. It was nice in the end that Raimi was the one who saw, I guess, like the last hit in on him.
That was a sweet one, because it was just like, what was the thing? Like, she reveals her back to show her wound, to go like, remember this, you did this to me.
She wants to make him recoil, so he looks away at the direction he shouldn't. And then he goes, oh yeah, my old man told me about that, my like photograph.
Turn around. Yeah.
And then he grabs Raimi and tries to, like, suddenly he can touch her, like, I don't know, like ghost person.
Because they're ghosts. I guess he realizes he's a ghost because he actually changes to his old face and everything.
Yeah, I guess maybe once you come to terms with the fact you're a ghost, you can then exert ghost powers on other ghosts or something. There's a wiki page about that somewhere, I'm sure. But then he tries to make her look around, and she says, oh, aren't you forgetting someone? And then dog appears.
Dog killed someone. About goddamn time,
it
Jojo.
Was good.
More importantly, just kills him. Bites his hand off.
Yes.
Yeah, that's real strong. That dog had a long time to, like, practice its vice.
But we should say, it wasn't the beating which got him here. It was him falling out into the street after the beating, and then having his head run over by an ambulance.
Just random as fuck. It's like,
I was waiting for them to censor the head rotation as his head was being pushed around by the tire, and it made me feel ill because I'm like, oh man, they're going to keep this going, aren't they?
It was up there with the dislocating arm in last week's Tiger Mask double.
Ooh. I didn't feel as grossed out by it because I was like, yeah, fuck that guy.
But yeah, it's kind of brutal. It's like,
it's just really ignoble end. It's like he's just like run over like a dog in the street.
It kind of needs to happen as well, because like they say, oh, we couldn't really bring him to justice because no one could understand what he did, and also if one of us killed him, we'd be a murderer, and that's no good for shonen plot.
But my favorite bit is everyone around agreeing that this could not be helped. It was nobody's fault. It was his fault.
It's not like we have a guy here who can heal people. I mean,
it was his fault for falling under the ambulance.
The thing about that death, though, is just his, like, oh, no face that he pulls. He's got this little sort of, oh, no, woe is me face, which, you know, he deserves it, but woof. Oh, that was a real strong bit of, like, but, hey, you can't have any of the heroes kill someone because then it makes them look real shitty due to, like, shonen lore.
I think they killed two people. Well, technically, killed one. Yeah, turned into a rock.
Yeah, but this is the bit where they sort of clench their fist and start crying, sort of thing. But to be fair, if anyone deserved it, Kira deserved to be blown.
Yeah, and we get to see him killed like twice. Essentially, we get to see his body be horribly mutilated, and then we get to see his ghost torn apart and pulled into hell.
Yes,
that's amazing.
I do like Raimi's line of like, "Oh, you're going somewhere where you won't have any rest.
You won't have any peace."
You really think I wouldn't think that you would try and do that when I fucking wait 15 years to do this to you?
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate thing of like, you know, I did wait 15 years for this, you know, come on. Like, I kind of want this. I want this real bad.
I live here. This is my house. I know how it works here.
Yeah, and then you have the cheerful goodbye where everyone turns up to say goodbye to the ghost lady.
I thought that was kind of nice, like including people who had never met her, but still were kind of like involved in this whole catch serial killer thing.
It was kind of nice to see like the actual like head count of people who'd survived. Like, I don't know. I feel like enough shows do the thing where they have the whole like everyone reunite and it's like five people left and you're like, oh, everyone died.
Yeah, and Koichi remembers that he's the narrator and does some narration to round all off.
He's had it usurped from himself quite a lot, so it would take a while to remember.
I did like Rohan having to admit that he has feelings about people as well. The Force Nautum was like, oh, fine, if you're ascending to heaven, Jesus. I'll say I'll miss you. Because initially he was like, I'm not going to miss you. You're already fucking dead.
It's the ultimate Rohan get out of jail free clause of like, no, I won't shed a tear. You're dead already. Why should I care? sniffing, you know.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
So yeah, you've him going around narrating on everything that's happening, I suppose. Except for his own dealio.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Doing the Animal House ending where you can see what happened next.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But they did the thing for two people and then it just went into like scrolling around the city to see what they were up to.
I really enjoyed that, actually. I did enjoy when Okuyasu took his old man to the Italian diner.
to try and fix him.
Yeah, it's great because it's like, oh, why didn't we try? Because you thought about that a while ago, clearly. I think everyone watched that and then it's just like, oh, he's now just a shinier like avocado man.
He's the best version of himself he can be. But he's still fucking horrible.
Yeah, he seems a lot more spry, a lot more animated, and a lot more happy about his lot.
Well, he's got a pet now.
Yeah. He still looks like an avocado, but hey, what are you going to do? and then you get the bit where, and obviously the final piece where Jotaro and Joseph are on a boat for some reason. I guess that's the boat that
it's the boat that Joseph came in on, apparently. It was just waiting for him.
But
he's kind of going like, yeah, this town will be okay. I know you're worried about leaving them, Jotaro, but this town will be okay because they all have hearts of gold. And the tearful farewell, hey, old man, hey, my old man, friggin', you got that picture of my mother I get sent you, right? He's like, even though I didn't say hello to your mother, I wish her nothing but the best. It's like, oh, good. I'm glad it's in your wallet.
Yoink.
Yeah. Reattaches it to the torn piece.
I have the end of the photo right here. Snatch. As a payback for all the fun and money you stole off me earlier on.
Yeah,
I feel I should have explicitly mentioned that.
Robbing his father, yeah.
Yeah, because he mentions about allowance, and I'm like, wow, that's a bit of a jerk move, even for like a cheeky stand move. And then I remembered, oh yeah, the invisible baby wobbed all his money. So,
Well, in a way, Joseph is like, one, ha-cha-cha, that's my boy.
Yeah, you can see him getting really angry, and then he's like, ah, I would have done that.
He totally would, though. He totally would.
Yeah, that's totally a Joseph Joestar move. He's just as dickish as he's dead.
Yeah.
But as good as well. Didn't it say he's going to adopt the baby as well?
He does, He adopts the baby because they couldn't find the mother and it was too complicated. And also, Jotaro got his PhD, his doctorate in marine biology.
Yes!
Thanks to a
starfish in the beach.
He was just hanging around that hotel all the time. He's like, I think I'll write a thesis on this starfish I found. I don't know when he had the time to do it, but he can't stop time.
I think
all the
times when there was something where he could have helped, he didn't. Well, let's just assume.
He was writing a thesis.
He was writing his thesis.
His laptop.
Can starfish have stand abilities?
By Jotaro.
His laptop and copious research notes were just out of shot on his hotel room bed. And also, it had to be a starfish, didn't it? Come on.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the entire thing, unsurprisingly. It was a good. Yeah. It was a real fun romp.
Yeah, it was. We've gone over this kind of like the strengths before, like, you know, even though this is like, it's not a globetrotting adventure, it's more concentrated in a very small town, and you know, the stakes in comparison seem like they should be much more talking, I guess, formerly a vampire bent on world domination versus, you know, a serial killer who's, you know, just commits like murders here and there, but it's still real stakes involved in trying to try and catch this guy down, stop him, otherwise it'll just keep going on forever. And final fight just plays out, you know, not across the streets of Cairo, laying destruction everywhere, but so just inside a house, and it's just two guys slugging it out. And the end
of the fight is like a random street corner. It's like, holy shit, he went flying. Like, from everyone else's point of view, that dude went flying. Oh, fuck, an ambulance ran over him. Whoops. You know, it's just like a weird accident, apparently.
I kind of prefer all that, because Dio was so crazy that you kind of couldn't take it. You know, it's a vampire overlord man, whereas like asshole jerk who keeps ruining everything constantly to try and keep serial killing.
Yeah.
You know, he needs that more. He needs that beat down more.
Saying it, but I thought it still felt eventful before all that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. By kind of lowering the, not lowering the stakes, but kind of lowering the...
Scope?
The scope of it. Yeah, exactly. By lowering that, it didn't lose anything for it. It still felt as exciting as it's ever been. Mm-hmm. In some cases, more so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have to say goodbye now to Joseph Joestar.
Nah, he's immortal. He'll live forever.
Well, apparently, supposedly, he said that in the next two parts, Joseph is still alive. He just does not appear in them.
I can't imagine being more decrepit than he was already. Like, I don't know, I still feel he's acting it out. He's not actually that decrepit. He's just acting out.
He seemed a lot less decrepit at the end of the series than he did at the start.
At the end when he was going like, I just have one thing to say. And I was like, is he going to shout, oh my God, for no good reason? I was like, he's just been holding back all this time.
Yeah, I guess this adventure has given him a new lease of life.
And he also has a new kid to raise, since he didn't raise the last kid he had.
That's the secret lesson of this, is, oops, more children.
More Joestars.
Yes, I think that's the lesson of the next part as well. As we're back to Italy for part 5.
Have they confirmed it? Part 5 is getting adapted yet?
They haven't, no, but let's just assume that they will.
Oh, God, I hope point. So.
God, just imagine how even much more crazy the visual design will be. Like, God.
Yeah. There needs to be some good in this world, so people just hold on to that hope.
Yeah.
Well, we've already got Thunderbolt Fantasy Season 2 coming, so there's at least some good in the world still, let's face it.
What Season 2?
Thunderbolt Fantasy, the puppet
show.
Yes. With the film coming out and everything of this arc, that seems kind of more likely they'd do the sequel for it. It's like, hey, did you like that film? Well, here's the sequel in a series, you know?
What, part 4? Are they going to make a film out of part 4?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't the part 4 is going to be the...
Part 4 is getting the live action, the film. Yeah.
Which seems the weirdest one to adapt to live action.
I want to see that, just to see what the hell they do with the characters. Like, what?
They can't find anyone that pretty, though, right?
It'd probably be easier to do that, because they already have the town to do all the other background.
Except, of course, they're filming it in Spain. No.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure this is a conversation we've already had on the podcast.
I forget. My bad. So easy.
Yeah. It's going to be all JoJo's all at once. It's going to be in a small town in Italy when they're fighting a vampire, and also in a prison.
Also horses.
Also those two using
vampire horses in a race.
Righty-ho, on to Dragon Ball Super Episode 71, The Death of Goku, The Guaranteed Assassination Mission. In which a man hires an assassin to kill him and is surprised when it happens. Or at least that's what I'm assuming the plot is of this mini-arc.
Well, it's either Goku did it, or I imagine someone else we didn't even know did, i.e. a god, because... The only way you can go get hit to come to cross dimensions to assassinate Goku was with the help of a god. So obviously there's some kind of esoteric training regimen for him.
So that happens at the start of the episode.
Yes, Goku gets killed at the start of the episode, and then the rest of the episode is a lead up to him getting killed. But the thing is, we know that Goku is expecting Hit to come along.
yeah, he spends the whole episode going like, I know he's around, he's hiding somewhere, he's coming for me. Not in a kind of a paranoid way, but more in like, I'm prepared to fight.
Oh, it's like, oh, I'm ready, I want to fight that guy, I guess.
Yeah.
Which gives you the impression that it's Goku who's arranged this assassination on himself.
That was a stupid idea.
He is Goku, though.
That's true.
And Whis seems to be in on it, and it seems to be part of a training regime for this tournament that's coming up.
Yeah.
Maybe they kill him and he's just going to train in heaven again.
Possibly. Or he's not really dead.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably the thought.
If he is, then no big deal, because we have godlike Benedict can resurrect things.
I think Gohan has a line in it where it's like, oh my god, my father's dead. I mean, like, it's not the first time, but, you know, and I'm like, yeah, he's been dead like twice before. It's fine.
He was dead for like half of my life. As well.
Yeah. Do you think at this point his kids are glad when he dies? Because they say, oh, thank god, I don't have to worry about getting a Christmas present now. That's one less present to buy, one less cake to bake.
I guess you have to put up with less bullshit in your life, you know?
But then again, you then have your mother's, like, direct ire trained on you rather than on your dad, so then you've got to pick up the slack that way, I suppose.
There's lots of silly stuff leading up to the fight, and we also get to see Hit do an assassination mission.
Yeah, it appears to turn into a different anime for a little bit.
Yeah, it turns into Cobra. Because the guys
a little bit, yeah.
The bodyguards have all got psycho guns. Of the guy.
Right. Yeah, okay.
We see that when he does these assassinations, he only ever kills the guy he's been hard to kill because of his time stopping powers.
He can just walk past everyone else.
He uses a world door and just goes in.
Yeah. And he can't be bought off.
Mm. And Dwayne, you know, in these Assassin's Creed games, you know, when you murdered a guy, but you get last words, even though you just stabbed him in the middle of the street.
Yeah, exactly, yep. Like that.
That happens exactly right here, but it makes sense because of obviously time stop powers.
Yeah, it does a bit of a context kind of thing where the guy's reacting is like, hey, why aren't my guards helping me while you're trying to assassinate me? And it's like, stop time. Sorry. This is happening now. Give me your last words. Okay, you're dead. And he does some kind of attack that, like, he appears to maybe punch him and make like a crater in his chest.
It's like a quick draw out of his pocket.
Yeah, quick draw fist. Which obviously is going to come up again later when he's fighting Goku.
Yeah.
I think I saw something like that in a comic where a guy had that, you know, like to have with a sword, you got the draw and resheath technique, you know, where you could do a very, very fast cut and you draw the sword back in again before you even sees it. But a guy did that in a comic book, he just had his hand in his pockets and then you just take his hand out of his pocket and toss it out really fast and do like a really powerful attack and put his hand back in his pocket without even seeing it. So it's probably a similar thing going on here.
Yeah, not a completely different show, but that showed up in Keijo recently.
Oh, yeah, the EI attack. That was real good.
You don't see nothing. And we're kind of like basically... I did like the My Two Dads bit with Piccolo going like, hey, Gohan, come on, don't lie to me.
Yes.
As they're carrying vegetables and shit.
Don't lie to your dad.
Your green dad.
Your green dad who once fed you to dinosaurs.
Isn't Goku wandering around with his eyes closed at some point?
Yeah, he's trying to track him just by sensing ki, and he's wandering through. Well, he wanders through a cinema.
A laundry store. He's being followed by Goten and Gohan, and
who have disguised themselves very cleverly.
Yes, and also Goten is too old to dress up as a superhero anymore. Even though Gohan
is at that age,
is far older and still wants to dress up like a superhero.
He's dressed up as a famous superhero. Why does he think this will be more inconspicuous?
Wait a minute, Gohan was a superhero. He's totally
Still. Great Saiyaman is like a famous superhero in this stage, right?
Yes, but Goten won't put on his psychic costume. He only put on the
sunglasses. Yeah, great disguise.
Yeah, so there's this lengthy scene of them trailing him around town, getting in everyone's way. And they have a big meal, and then he gets killed.
Yep.
That's pretty much the episode.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting a little more comedy in this one, because it's, I guess, after the last episode and that kind of thing, but hopefully it doesn't go, like, too dark with it.
I'm sure it won't.
Even in the Trunks thing, they managed to get plenty of jokes in.
I mean, they're building to whatever that thing is happening in February, which they're hyping like mad at the moment.
Yeah, probably either the tournament or something before that.
Yeah, I think it is the tournament, but I think it's like it looks like it's going to be like, if you lose, your universe is destroyed.
Shit.
So I think it might be their attempt to do it like Crisis on Infinite Earths, but for Dragon Ball. So somehow, like, all these people from other universes might end up in the main Dragon Ball universe.
Okay.
Or they'll all get merged. That was my gut feeling from seeing what little has been released so far.
Well, we know they're not scared to kill entire planets of people now. No. So.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, we've known that for a while.
And we've seen a universe get destroyed.
Yeah, yeah.
Last time on Dragon Ball Z, 4 different possibilities for existence winked out. join us. What?
Gotta raise those stakes.
You've got to kill off those characters instead of having to do more designs. Otherwise, it'll like Bleach, and then you'll be doomed.
No, I like forcing them to do more designs, because that way we get Winnie the Pooh with boxing gloves on.
Yeah, that's
yeah, but then you end up with like 20 chapters later, we're like, oh god, I can't remember anyone anymore, please help.
Well, at least they wear different clothes in this. That's the problem with Bleach, was they're all wearing the same black robes.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, and none of them are a giant robot, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, it's good that the parallel universe version, so you get, you know, Frost instead of Frieza, who looks just like Frieza, but he's good, kind of.
Yeah.
But not really. He was on the run in the
he
news.
Was, yeah, he was,
yeah. As you see him on the news, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, on to the shorts. Bono Bono, episode 24, The Big Rock of the Rock Tree, which is probably the scariest episode of anime this week.
I was flat out, like, kind of, like, I remember, like, Bono Bono can get a bit deep at times. And at the end of this, I was just kind of, like, not unsatisfied, but just flabbergasted. I'm like, wait, how did it get back up there? Oh, God, what's going on in this world?
Yeah, it raises a lot of, what was that anime that really annoyed me? The one with the bus.
Oh, Lost Village.
It raises a lot of Lost Village type questions. It's like, hold on a fucking second.
I reckon it was Chipmunk.
I think it was the Putaway Man.
Yeah. You think you put it back up?
Oh, wait, it's yeah, you're
right. The urban legend, Brian.
That actually makes sense.
Yeah, anyway, so there's this big rock in a tree.
Like as big as the leaves of a tree would be.
And they're arguing how it got up there.
And they're also saying it's apparently good luck to see it fall. And I was like, yes. Well, if you saw it fall, it would never go back up.
And they're explaining to Raccoon that a stick can hold up a rock, even though the rock weighs a lot more than the stick.
Because their theory is the tree grew up underneath a rock. Yeah.
So Raccoon's going to try this by climbing up the tree and poking it with a stick.
To see if he can lift it with the stick. And I was like, but you're not strong enough.
And he has some doubts, but he decides he's going to live his life the way he lives his life. If that means getting crushed by a giant rock, why so be it. And in doing this, the rock falls out of the tree.
Mm.
And then the next day, well, first of all, they get Wolverine's dad to try and help put it back in the tree.
And he has a very complicated plan that he didn't really think through.
He gives up at the first failure.
It looks impressive. You know, it's just an awesome cast of pulleys and levers here to get it back up in a tree. He's like, no, this just kind of sits there. He's put a lot of ropes over it.
Yeah, it's all like really carefully sort of like segmented and put together. Then he pokes a stick and then goes, nah, it's useless. It's like, what? What was all that for?
So they go home, and the next morning the rock's back in the tree. And they're like, who put the rock in the tree? And Chipmunk says, Chipmunk did.
Yeah, take credit for something. I can probably get away with this lie, right? No, you can't.
Because he explains that because it's lucky to see the rock fall, he made a wish that the rock would get back in the tree. And therefore, he put it back in the tree.
With his wish, yeah.
And so Raccoon kicks him.
Yeah.
The end. Well, they're kind of left wondering how he did get in the tree.
Yeah, I don't think there's any moral lesson or anything here. It's just like, wait, what?
Well, yeah, I was waiting for the cutaway that explain it, and it didn't come.
Nope.
Well, I think there are two lessons here. You know, there was one. Life are just mysteries. You know, it's kind of just fun. No, just don't try to figure it out. Just kind of let experience it. Let's wash over. Don't try to explain it away for yourself. Mm. The other is small things, you know, may seem innocuous at first, but they actually can have a larger effect on things. For instance, water that drips on a rock will eventually wear a hole in it. Also, when Chipmunk ate 48 acorns, and he's really, really small, but he ate 48 acorns once, and by gum, that's a lot of acorns, isn't it?
Yeah, that also got him a kick from Raccoon.
Yeah.
A fishing cat also had a go at putting the rock in the tree by just moving about a bit and then deciding he can't get it back in the tree.
I like this thing. It was like, look, check it out. I can just shuffle it across. And I was like, okay, shuffle up the tree. And he's like,
Well, he sort of mentions, oh, if you touch its pressure points, it becomes a lot easier. And I was expecting the rock to break apart at that point.
No, I think that was another bullshitting to children thing that he did. But I enjoyed this, just for the weirdness of, first of all, the image of that rock in the tree, and then the weirdness of how the hell did the rock get back in the tree.
Mm.
Talking of weird things, Shonen Ishibe Go Go Gomachan, episode 26, Year's End, Gomachan Singing Competition. If you want to hear almost 10 minutes full of very bad singing.
Mm.
Boy.
This is the anime for
Merry
you.
Merry Christmas.
It was great because it never got better. The singing was just always bad.
I gotta train harder. And it's like, yeah, you're not improving, kid.
In fact, it was getting worse because he was adding things to it.
He was just getting louder, mostly. Yeah. It was like, I gotta get louder. Because like, that's the best kind of singing.
Yes, so Sigel could hear him. And he could.
Yes.
His finely tuned ears. Well, tuned to probably Ishiba's voice. Yeah.
Yes. So basically, they're watching a singing competition hosted by his mate's mum, and they announce there's going to be a children's version, and they say, oh, you should go in and enter.
Well, his dad just randomly says it while reading the paper.
He also randomly gives out the warning of how to watch TV.
That was great. I love that. Just inline slide it in.
The PSA, yeah.
Yeah. And so all the kids want to get involved, and also your teacher does as well, the PE teacher. And they have to keep on saying, but it's a children's singing competition.
He's very proud of his throat. Yep. Or his voice box, I think he kept calling that.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not even singing, he's just proud of his voice box. And so, yeah, throughout the episode, Ishibe is singing this song about a bodyguard of a winning ice cream stick or lollipop stick.
Yeah, the bodyguard ate, like, the lollipop stick in one... I'm not sure. It's the same lyrics, and I have no idea what the song is about.
So, first of all, Gomachan starts singing along with him. Then a minor bird shows up and starts singing along. Then he decides to
add... It's a weird subplot, yeah.
Decides to add a xylophone to the act.
Yeah.
And Gomachan wants to play the xylophone, but Ishibe won't let him. So Mum puts some glasses together, and he plays those instead. And then he plays the dad's teeth. And then, yeah, so they go. Then you get the singing competition. We've also seen there's a sign that there's a lost minor bird. That's a plot which needs to be wrapped up by the end of this episode. So they're at the singing competition. Everyone's getting gonged off, or belled off in this case.
Mm.
And there's Ishibe, and because he's been singing all through the night, so Sigel will hear him, his voice is completely gone. And this is represented by just the voice actress just going...
Yeah, and I was like, that's not how hoarseness sounds. Yeah. But okay.
So Gomachan sings for him. And everyone's, and then the minor bird shows up. And then everyone gets on stage and they all start singing along.
Yeah.
They all start singing Ode to Joy, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that got real messy. It's like, oh, it's all these classical tracks that I know from other films that use them because they're public domain. Oh, God, why? But then, yeah.
Yeah, and everything's wrapped up. I assume Gomachan would?
That seems to be the implication, yeah.
Because the teacher at the end came up and shoved his vocal cord, shoved the camera down his throat to show off his voice.
His golden throat, yeah.
Look at this. It's amazing.
But yeah, I like the sense of the show just gradually becoming more and more chaotic as it went along at the end. And also, I kind of liked the torture of a show with just really bad singing all the way through. Sounds like Dwayne is not so impressed.
No, it was pretty fun. It was, I mean, like, anything with the teacher is generally going to be quite fun.
Anything to add, Niall?
Does this mean we're not going to get Gomachan Christmas episode then?
I'm guessing so.
Well, they pretty skipped over winter and New Year's.
Yeah.
That's
more bad news. Even Haybot's not getting a Christmas episode. We technically had a Christmas episode this week, but it had nothing to do with Christmas.
The best kind of Christmas episode.
That seems like Haybot, yeah.
Yes. Okay, next up, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 12, The Genius is Sickly, in which Chidori is healed back to health by the very man she went out to assassinate. Mm. And it turns out that she's so kind-hearted, she can't kill people who've been nice to her.
Yeah, she feels bad about it. I did like the thing of, was like, okay, I gotta find this guy to kill. What'd you say your name was? That guy? Okay, cool. I gotta kill this guy, and then I gotta go back to that guy and thank him. And she's like, hold on a second.
It was really,
really, really slow. Yeah.
It was really good because it used the full name each time, just to sort of hammer it home. I can't remember the name, but it was just like, oh, it was really nice to meet so-and-so. I'll go and kill this person, and then I'll come back to say hello to so-and-so. Hey, wait. I must admit, like, because the guy is sickly, he does the whole coughing up blood thing, the comical sort of coughing up blood thing. Which I know it's kind of cheesy and done, but I really, like, I find it funny every time, because I guess I'm a four-year-old, but I do find that funny.
Are we not sure that he was just coughing up pink soup?
I think he wasn't very upset, so I think it was.
That's true, yeah.
I think it was kind of funny the way they used it here, because they played it off as like, oh, I really helped you when you were dying, and he's just there dying, and he's like, I like to live in the countryside away from people, but the wild dogs are such a problem, and she's like, they're waiting for you to die. And it's just like, everything is just like, why isn't this guy fucking keeled over dead?
Because he's the same as Toki, you know, he's got radiation poisoning, but he's still like up and about beating guys up.
Right, okay.
He's a plot relevant character. He can't die yet. It's not fair.
He's a story. He doesn't die at this point in history, so therefore he can't die.
So he's got plot armor there, okay.
Because he decides that he's going to leave the Saito clan, and the pair of them will attack a castle and take it over.
Yeah, because the way he says it initially that confuses Chidori is like, oh, why don't we say that the me of this clan died? And she goes, huh? And then he has to go, yeah, we'll take over this castle and it'll be fine, don't worry.
So we need to kill a guy called Saito, huh? Well, I know just a guy. A job.
People turning on their masters. I think that was a frequent occurrence in this era, as we shall get to in Drifters eventually.
So is she just going to become involved in every major political upheaval that happens?
I assume up to a point, but otherwise she's going to have to get older at some point. So I'm assuming it's like within a cluster of years rather than
I figure within a certain period of years.
She'll be like a young Indiana Jones who was, you know, involved with every major event in history leading up to World War I and beyond.
Yeah, okay.
I assume she's not going to die at Nobunaga's side.
That would be kind of tragic.
Well, she won't. She's explained she'll run away.
Well, she didn't throw up in Drifters, so she must survive to live a happy life, right?
Yeah.
Happened to all ninjas. Yeah, they all lived happy lives. Fine.
Right, what's next on our full-length menu? Did we all watch Mr. Osamatsu JRR special this time? Or enough of us to discuss it?
I did, anyway.
I forgot. Shit.
Again.
Okay,
forgot to.
I can't keep you for this for Christmas. You gotta talk about it.
Okay, right. So when going into this, I had like in my head a list of four jokes that they were going to make, and they made them all.
Excellent.
So are you the Osamatsu Sandowsing rod now?
Yeah, I was like, well, no, it was fairly obvious. I was like, there's going to have to be some thing where their jock is. Yes. Right. There's going to have to be something where there's horse versions of them. Yes.
Yes.
There's going to have to be a joke about horse dicks. Yes. Yep. Someone's going to have to be fucked by a horse. Yes.
What? What? No, it's just Christmas. Yep. Why are there horses?
Because it's a sketch comedy thing about the Japanese Horse Fishing Association.
Yes.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Sorry, I missed that.
It's one of these things where it's like, surely they knew what they were getting into when they asked the Osamatsu staff to make a promotional video.
It might have been all the old fogies who remembered the original and go like, oh, yes, that was charming. How about you guys do it? And they're like, new stuff. Because we're not like that no more, lad.
Because it kind of, much of it acts like a guide on how to behave at a race course and how to gamble, but then at the same time taking the mickey out of the very idea of gambling.
Okay.
It's more like gambling and a horse thing. Not even once, kids. Don't even do it.
But yeah, it's another sketch show episode. But
okay.
You're saying Niall.
On the one hand, just seem to be making up and saying, horse racing is totally cool, you know, isn't it? It's a real kind of fun last that I have, and then it just takes away on the other hand, completely just undercuts everything it's trying to set up.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to show those guys doing something, that's probably a thing you shouldn't be doing, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you had the Osamatsu who's like earnestly endorsing something, you don't want to be doing that because that's a bad idea, because it's the Osamatsu's, for goodness sake. One question, though, I'm going to regret asking this, but who receives the horse dick then?
I can't. Is it Osamatsu? I think it's Osamatsu, isn't it?
yeah, it's there's like a sketch thing there where like Choromatsu was like the gate attendant, and they're all trying to like bring in stuff that obviously aren't horses to go racing on. So he was trying to bring in a car or a motorbike, and was saying, "Get out of here, get out of here." And then it comes back around and one's saying, "Okay, you guys, a man riding a horse. What about a horse riding a man? Is that allowed?" And so we see this spectacle play out.
Right.
And it very, very painfully does so. Right up until like, the ad break, the eye catch, but in, they have the voice actor for Osamatsu just hear his like going, "Oh, like he was again over the
a good voice actor performance then.
Oh dear.
I feel like I should make a GIF.
And unfortunately for me, they introduced another insult for Choromatsu.
Oh yes.
Oh shit, what's the new one?
They call him Fappy Brian.
Oh dear.
And which Choromatsu is like, who even is that? Who's Brian?
Oh man. They're calling you out, man.
What else is there? There's like a lengthy bit where Ichimatsu is explaining how to behave at a race course, which the final rule or one of the major rules is no jishimatsus.
I know, that sounds all right.
Yeah, that seems sensible. He's probably not going to obey the rules.
There's a sketch where they kind of go all through their different methods of what they decide to bet on. I'm trying to think what other sketches there were.
They basically do like the end of Iami's counterattack again.
Yes, they do.
The horses this time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the end of the episode, is they're all getting ready to have a horse race. Of course, Jushimatsu is in his baseball car again, not on a horse.
Perfect.
I think in general, everyone's sort of on their horse equivalents, apart from him. Yeah, it's worth checking out. It's not quite as how... Because you have to expect they knew what they were getting. Whereas I think with the I Tenchi Muyo, surely they can't have been expecting that when they wanted Tenchi Muyo to promote whatever area that's set in.
It is also matches, though, and it is like putting on a nice, comfortable pair of underwear again.
Yes, it is. Just you have to question whether that underwear's been cleaned.
It probably got skids in.
I didn't say it was clean. I said it was comfortable.
Right, on to more regular stuff. Let's crack on with some more comedies. Time Bokan 24, episode 12. Joan of Arc was the first blank. In which I think you're supposed to think at first Joan of Arc was the first magical girl. But it turns out to be Joan of Arc was the first 38-year-old woman dressing up in cosplay to please her boyfriend.
Yeah, it says first magical girl. It's like, she's not really, though. She has super strength. And she's just doing it because her boyfriend's a freaking loon?
Yes. And this was the episode which felt most like a Yo-Kai Watch story, in that the happy ending is not really that happy. The heroes think, oh, we've solved this problem. Let's go on with our lives. And technically they have. I mean, she hasn't been burnt at the stake, so no matter how shitty her life is.
An important part of her storyline.
It's better than the history we're familiar with from the history books. But they're kind of...
Most things are better than burning at the stake, sure.
Really? I don't know. Like, you know, having to put up with this for the who knows how much the rest of your life, perhaps, like, you probably were going to bring at some point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I have to admit, I do like the idea of Time Bokan 24 having shades of Orochuban Ebichu with the whole cosplay angle.
I don't know what that reference is.
Oh, sorry. Ebichu minus the house? No?
I do, yes.
Okay, that thing.
Yeah. Okie doke. Call it by its English name, Elliot. I wonder what it is.
Sorry, it's how I saw it originally. I saw it on Facts up here.
Yes, it definitely has elements of that with Joan of Arc in this. She's like a super strong cosplayer. When she's shot from distance, she looks like a magical girl, but when they draw her close up, she's got more... Her features are more like a 38-year-old woman's.
It seems like she can do like just a cartoony kind of head flip and switch between it, but every now and again she goes like... She can't hold it for long and just slips into having lines on her face and stuff. Yeah.
The bad guys dress up as angels to try and convince her to go to war with the English.
They go the religious angle. Yeah, okay.
They do, yes.
I guess that would make it historically accurate, though. Yeah.
What do what What do they change their mecha into this week? Oh, it's
an angel.
Tusken Bimajo in the angel costume. That's an angel mecha, which is...
which is like, hey, how about fan service? Let's get some of that in.
Yeah, this is a kid show again, I thought.
You got to throw a little something in for daddy.
That's what they said. So it's like the more the mecha gets damaged, the more its clothes fall off, and the more of her clothes fall off, and her embarrassment makes it more powerful.
That's it.
Yeah. Thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's
so it hasn't beat.
Get in before your clothes.
Yes, it hasn't beat. But luckily, they repaired the first bug robot, so they send that through as well. They combine into a dragon robot.
It's a pretty dumb looking dragon, but all right.
Dragon.
Meanwhile, the boyfriend's sort of asking Joan of Arc why she's dressed in armor like Joan of Arc of history.
Mm.
And she's pretending, that's because I'm trying to summon a dragon. And then the dragon appears and he's more in love with her than ever.
Yeah.
So the true history has been saved.
Hooray.
I do like how it goes out. It's like, you know, this true history, maybe it's better off if we left it as it's supposed to be, as it was read. Because the alternative does seem to be both disrespectful and probably worse.
But the show kind of knows that as well. It's not they do point out that how a lousy a boyfriend this guy is.
Yeah, several times. It's like, Joan, you can do better than this guy. Yeah. But that's the entire thing. Like, we're rooting for the bad guys, but we know they'll never win.
Wow, but they've got a plan to counter this new mecha next week. Dun, dun, dun. Maybe they'll get their first win next week, Dwayne.
I hope so. I would like history to not be dumb.
And next week's episode is the Christmas episode, and it's got another Santa with muscles.
Yeah.
So Muscle Santa is just standard Santa now, is it?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Well, part of the true history, yes.
Yeah, we got that got rewritten into the history books a few weeks ago. We didn't notice.
Ah, right.
But yeah, I enjoyed this episode a lot.
Hmm.
I think it's feeling more like the show I was expecting it to be now. Kind of the true, as you say, the true history is not necessarily.
Yeah, there are enough times that are having hesitation about doing it now. Like, they don't seem as enthusiastic anymore about trying to go about fixing this. They seem to be much questioning a lot more of what they're doing here.
Yeah. Like, are we making everything worse? But in a comedy way, yeah.
Are we the baddies?
It's like a man like Tokyo, he's coming back from one thing. Oh, by doing this now, I'll probably do better. My history chest. No, I won't, because it's just no one's going to believe any of this bullshit now.
Right, next up, let's do the other remaining comedy, Classicaloid, episode 11. At least do the chores. In which everyone has to do chores.
Yeah. Oh, this is probably one of the best ones I've seen in this for a long time.
Yeah, I've been liking it a lot lately, but this had lots of like ridiculous faces in it and some nice comedy direction. Mm. And Schubert gradually losing his shit to the point where people don't recognise him anymore.
It was so good now if he'd be freaking out and being like a long, loud stream of yelling, and then it would just cut away very suddenly to another scene, cut off all of that racket he was making.
Yeah, so Callie basically says she's got to go away to see
an ailing aunt or something.
Ailing, yes. And so she's left a list of chores for all these people to do, except for Mozart. His chore is to not do anything.
Yeah, that sounds sensible.
Because they only make it worse. And then they have this lengthy argument over what they want to do. List wants to be the symbol while she's gone.
Yeah, because we need a female symbol for the house. And if you're gone, it's going to be me, because I'm the only other woman here. You know, that kind of way. Yeah, and they all have, like... What was the ridiculous things they had? Like, I think Mozart wanted to be called, like, king. And it was like, well... And List is like, well, fine, Beethoven's going to be fucking emperor then. Fucking, you know, trying to come up with something better.
Yeah, they're all arguing about who's going to be the leader. Mozart wants to do chores, so they have to run through all these different ways of selecting who's going to do what.
Mm.
It turns out that it's not a sick aunt. She's going away with her friends on a holiday to get away from these idiots.
Just for like a day or two.
Yeah.
It's selfish, but it's kind of like, yeah, I think she earned it at this point.
You really can't blame her. Like,
no.
And so eventually they decided on the thing they're going to do, and Mozart has somehow got jobs now, which leads to him. He's got to clean the roof, and he decides he can't scrub the dirt off the roof, so he decides to paint it pink to make it look nicer.
To which everyone's just like, dude, that is so much worse.
And also he knocks the clef off the top of the building.
Yeah, I do like the whole scene where basically Beethoven has to distract her from all this bullshit. And everyone is basically like freaking out, like watching from the sidelines, kind of going like, okay, how's he going to do this? And just how that devolves into something else.
Yes, because she thinks
into a scene from a different anime, maybe, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, she thinks he's confessing his love to her, and she lets him down gently.
And he has to go along with it? He's like, I understand!
And then some pink paint drips from the roof, and then he has to pretend that classical lines throw up pink soup when they're emotionally traumatised.
Yeah,
but then
they
all fall off, and then...
Like, why are you all covered in pink soup? And it's like,
we saw Beethoven get shot down there. Oh, I'm so upset about that. Oh, but and Sosuke is also like getting on sick as well, and so is Hashi. But Pad goes, according to my research, you know, this happens to humans and shoebills as well. You know, it's very, very rare, but it's all in one place. It's a real thing, I swear.
Yeah, and she just like incongruous kind of fucking look at them, walks out, looks at the roof, and kind of goes like, "Fuck's sake!"
You've got to
clean when I get back.
And they've cleaned the roof when she gets back, but they've also like blown up the laundry room and destroyed the chandelier.
For a house they spent so long trying to save in the first episode, they're not doing a very good job of it.
They spend nearly every episode fucking wrecking it in some regard. Yeah,
it's so much. When she watches in the kitchen, I think like Mozart is like gone through the wall, and Pan is on a table and just spontaneously bursts into flame.
Yep. Everything that could go wrong went double wrong.
And so she decides to take them on holiday with her as well.
It's the only way to keep them safe.
Yes.
I feel so bad for her because she was...
And also her friends were like, are they coming too? She's like, yeah, so we're all going. You know, just sort of foisting them upon them.
And she's basically referring to them as her children at this point as well.
Not far wrong.
Mm. Oh, I feel so bad for her. She's so beaten down by these jerks living in her house, just wanted to just like a day or two rest from them, but no.
Yeah, her dad's plan of them helping her appears to not be working at all yet. Maybe eventually, but yeah.
Well, they can be helpful on certain levels, but actually doing chores is a little difficult for them.
A lot, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good episode.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Right, let's go for... What should we go for next? We should probably do the ending things last, so let's do Drifters.
Sure.
Yeah.
Drifters, episode 11, The Adventure of the Pistol Daimo. Bullet Counting Song. In which I go and look for my notes. It's a while since I watched this.
Well, yeah, Count Descender me, he's smuggling... Nobunaga, Toyohisa, and into the capital in his like horse-drawn carriage and saying, yo, the Count's sent me, let me in. So saying, oh yeah, sure, do you know who I am? Let me in. Don't look at the carriage, this is my carriage, this is my private carriage, don't look at my carriage, just let me in. I gotta see.
Let in all carriages that have my standard on them.
I gotta see Paramount about some important business. Okay, let him right in. Okay.
And they go ahead with their coup d'etat. He's already got people on the council who are on his side, willing to let the Drifters take over.
Well, they're just happy. It's like, I don't want to die. They just kind of raise their hands. It's like, yeah, I'll go with the new regime.
But then a couple of other people say, I think you should give the city to the ends and prepare yourselves for your deaths.
And it's like, yeah, I don't think these guys are with it.
I don't recall paying you to say that. Wait a minute. Rasputin, get out from behind there.
So Toya gets on the table, walks across the table, and then just starts kicking in one of them.
Yeah, and it's like Rasputin is there and all in like holographic ghost form going, ha 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 ha, you can't defeat us, we're at the end, we got the Black King on our side, but hey, stop ignoring me, why are you kicking the guy's face in, stop it, hey!
Yeah, he's actually getting freaked out that he's continually kicking that dude's head in.
And then Nobunaga comes and starts pointing out that, hey, you've just made us saviors, not conquerors, you idiot. And then basically starts laughing at him and says, why aren't you laughing now?
Yeah, I love the fact that Nobunaga is amused by the whole thing. It was like, wait a minute, we're the good guys? Holy shit. This is fucked.
How did that happen? Whoa.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Well, I'm Nobunaga, I'll rule it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then...
I think, like, the guy at the end, Hishikata, the Shinsengumi guy, he was there as well to try and initiate, you know, they had the exact same plan, but just the Drifters beat him to it, pretty much, and they go for plan B. They can't take over, burn it all to the ground.
Yes. So they're sending the shock troops, who we saw before... And then, is it the... Oh, what's the name of the guys who they give the guns to? They're the Greek guys.
Oh, shit.
There's like 100 drifters from Greece. The Sacred...
Were those actually drifters, or were they actually humans from that place? The Sacred...
No, they're like, you know, some, like, I think famous...
Sacred Band of Thebes.
Sacred Band of Thebes, that's it. Yeah. It was that's like an actual thing, like of like paired gay partners in as warriors that were apparently like super badass. But I love the fact that Hannibal's come along and is like, that was my fucking idea. You guys stole it.
They were, yes.
Yeah, it was his idea, the Sacred Band of Carthage.
Yes.
And it's just like, motherfuckers. I love that he's just getting upset by all the copyright infringement everyone's doing to his tactics. It's great.
Yeah, so they explain guns to these guys and... They split into three units. They use the crystal balls to communicate between everybody.
Mm.
And we learn the power of the gun.
Mm.
Yeah, and even Nobunaga's kind of reacting like, they haven't quite got the hang of it yet, but it's still scaring the shit out of those kobolds. So it's doing its job, yeah.
Yeah, and alongside that, we got like Nasu and the elves and the rubes raining their arrows upon them, and then we got Toihis and the dwarves who wade in and just clear up whatever's left. So it's a pretty good system we got here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then your Shisenagumi guy gets mad and seems to be entering the fray.
Mm.
I'll try not to say what happens because I've already watched the next episode. So, yeah. But yeah, this was a good episode. The next episode, I will say, is even better.
Oh, excellent. Because yeah. I enjoyed this one. There was a little bit of action on the end that... I feel like the show doesn't do action as well as it does world building, but I thought it worked quite well in this because it's showing you how each of the units are working in combat, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, well, that's good, you know. Like, it does just feel like these are like, you know, a lot of large-scale warfare going on, but you don't feel like it's this kind of chaotic mess. You can see how it's sort of carefully engineered and planned out.
Yeah, it feels like less like an action kind of thing and more like a strategy thing. And when you see the underlying strategies that not only political strategies but also like battle strategies, it's kind of a lot more fun, and it does it quite well.
We have a thing that, you know, like, we have to kind of premise the fun. What if Nobunaga fought Hitler or that kind of thing? This sounds like some kind of like high class of like kind of comic thing that someone dreamt up one day and got published.
Yeah,
what if Abraham Lincoln was a vampire hunter or something like that? But it's not really like that. Like I said, it seems to be much more of kind of thoughtfully kind of planned out in that way. It's not as like why Sonic's throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. It actually, there is a reason for these particular guys from history all in here, all teamed up together because they have something to share with each other, or they're kind of similar in their own ways, but even though they're from different times and places.
Yeah, the planning is on the macro level, because if you look at it if you look at each individual piece, you're like, what? But then when you look at it as a whole, you're like, oh, this is where it all hangs. Like, of course this all works. Like, they had it from a higher plane, and they said, okay, we'll do this, this, and this, and this will all work together, and we'll get some good material out of all this. But the moment you try and look at anything in detail, it's like, huh? What?
Well, again, that makes the D&D comparison. Like, when you try and think about the global economy and stuff, it's kind of like, what? But in this case, like, it's really fun to see those kind of interlocking pieces start working together and what they make out of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little thing. It's like when Nobunaga found out about the crystal balls that, you know, basically functions as walkie-talkies. That's more thinking like what if a brilliant, like, military strategist like Nobunaga had access to something like that? What would he, like, do with that?
Yeah.
It's that kind of a way. That kind of interesting alternate history type of job.
Mm.
Right. Okay, it's a quick check up on Flip Flappers. Watching Flip Flappers. Dwayne, I think you've given up, haven't you?
Give it up.
Niall, Flip Flappers.
I'm not trying to get to it recently. I think it's near the end of it anyway. Where did I stop with that? I started about episode 9. So yeah. There's only a few left, so I finished up. From what I hear, it's not going to stick it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'll finish it out and see for myself. You will know in the new year what I think about it.
Okay.
This week's Haybot episode, I said, was technically the Christmas episode. but it was more a world-building episode in which they introduced a new concept to the world of Haybot, which are cyborgs who can screw screws into them.
What? Okay.
Sure, that'll be more important later on down the line in the storyline.
Yeah, in the main plot that... Yeah. Is either the future or the past? Who can tell?
I think it's the future at this point.
So there's going to be a new toy where children can get a brace that they can shove bolts into themselves.
It's a belt. It's like a Kamen Rider belt.
Okay, totally, yeah, of course.
That's totally toyetic, yeah.
I was expecting an arm brace, but a belt also works.
Yeah, I think it's a Voka belt, they call it. But I'm sure they get around to arm braces eventually if it runs long enough. Right, on to Tiger Mask Double, episode 11, and the Tiger's Killer Move, in which we take a tour of the GWM Performance Center. Nothing to do with the WWE Performance Center at all. We also Tiger the Dark's secret identity goes to see his dad and give... Well, he doesn't see him, but drops some pudding off for him.
So obviously he still cares about his dad, but for some reason he still refuses to see him?
Possibly.
Is it because he's gone over to the American thing? Because I think his dad would be pretty proud of him. If
maybe
arrested, right?
Maybe his dad didn't know. Last time we saw him, didn't have a huge scar over his eye.
No, because when the nurse is like, "Oh, some guy dropped him off. He didn't say his name. He had a big scar on his face. He looked like a wrestler or something." And
oh,
he's like,
yeah. Oh, good.
It's
point,
like,
yes.
Oh yeah, my son got fucked up that time when I did. Yeah.
So he's training. We see him training at the performance center, and. But also, Tiger Mass Double is going to New Japan to train and learn a killer move, so he can take.
It's like, yeah, everyone walking up to him this episode, going like, "Dude, you need a finishing move. Come on!"
And his manager's uncle, who he normally trains with, gets very upset about this.
Like, in my day, a body slam was good enough.
Yes, and also, why don't you want to train at my gym?
And you see later on, it's because he wants to see what other people's finishers are like and what they feel like by testing them on himself.
Yes. So basically, it's an episode of the stars of New Japan Pro Wrestling beating up Tiger Mask.
Like, he gets up from it, but yeah, it's trying to make them look real good.
And then they take him out to go and sit under a waterfall because Goto apparently learned to move his new finishing move during this, and then the young guy points out to Tanahashi, no, that's not why he was still sitting under the waterfall.
No, that was a different plot line. You're getting mixed up, dude.
You got the angle wrong. It's like, poor Goto. They can't even remember his angles in the show. He's not even been in the show yet. The big thing is Tetsuya Naito showed up this episode, the leader of, God, never pronounce this right, Los Ingobernables de Japón. Yeah. Yes. Mm. He doesn't beat up Tiger Mask. He just tells Tiger Mask to tranquillo. And then they go and have this fire ceremony, which I'm not sure if it's a real thing or not.
I think it might be similar to him wrestling bears. It seems like a bit too mad. Bit like, it's like,
yes.
Yeah.
But they say it's like a New Japan joining ceremony or initiation ceremony, where Tanahashi and the young guy have got two burning stakes, which they're pointing at Tiger Mask.
Backing him up against the cliff, and then he does like a sweet, what does he call it, like a flip kick or something.
Yeah, it's like a running moonsault type thing that he does. But we don't see the last part of it, so we kind of got the idea that he's got his finishing move, but they're not going to show it till next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed this. It was a lot for the sort of meta stuff with the WWE Performance Center stuff and the seeing inside the New Japan dojo, as it is.
Yeah, and I figure it was probably like a lot of... it was good for people watching that guy like do his moves, but in animation.
Yeah.
Because he does like all his fucking signature things. Yeah.
Yes. Every single Tanahashi move is in this episode. Yeah, next week it's back to the tournament.
Mm.
Yeah. Apparently Tanahashi hopes to meet... Sorry. It's the ace hopes to meet Tiger Mask.
Oh! Yeah, they do their really obvious thing. It was like, hey, it's totally us. We can't keep up this farce anymore. Yeah.
hopes to beat Tiger Mask in the finals. But I'm guessing he won't.
I wonder if your man will cheap him out rather than, like you say, he can't like lose as badly as the other guy.
No, I'm sure it'll be like either Yellow Devil will like have to retire due to injury or something, because Yellow Devil will be too brutal.
Oh, we see him in the training center in the friggin' pressure-induced NASA fucking hyperbolic time chamber.
Yeah, he's got much better cardio than all the other guys. Even
yeah, he's not
mask.
Even sweating, like, it's great.
The other guys aren't wearing their masks during the training.
Isn't your man wearing it, the
no, he's
Tiger
not wearing,
the Dark?
No, I don't think he's wearing his Tiger mask at the time, is he? Maybe he is.
I thought he was, but maybe, yeah, he could be wearing it for interviews and shit.
Oh, yes, because he has an interview, and yeah. They could interview anyone they liked except for Yellow Devil. And so the interview with Tiger the Dark was like, can you tell as much as you possibly can without giving away your identity?
He's just given the fact sheet information for the most part. Yeah.
Right. I didn't heartily endorse this product and or service.
Yes. did you watch Bungo Stray Dogs? You don't watch that, do you, Elliot? So let's do that first, then we'll finish on Yuri on Ice.
Sure, okay.
Okay, Bungo Stray Dogs. This was a great ending.
Yeah. Mm. Really, really strong ending. Like, the kind of ending where you're like, I am satisfied and I want more stuff later on.
I mean, as good as JoJo's ending was, I'd say this was a better ending than JoJo's.
That's fair. I think that's fair. I think it's been a weaker season overall, like, especially in comparison to the first season, but a great ending, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got a fast ending, kind of how JoJo's have handled cliffhangers, where the final battle thing is, like, only half the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the rest of its wrap up,
so basically you two lads kick the shit out of Fitzgerald, and Fitzgerald has to spend every single penny he's got.
They basically spend a lot of it kind of bickering rather than fighting, but they kind of go like, yeah, let's fuck up this guy.
Yeah,
they
realize
they're really not happy with having to do this.
Yeah, they basically combine powers, don't they?
Apparently that was your man's plan all along.
Yes, that scene in the second half. So we learned that Dazai and the old guy, whose name I forget, from the Port Mafia.
Black Lizard.
They were co-conspiring to make Atsushi and Akutagawa into a weapon to protect Yokohama. Mm. And was it the old guy who attacked the office in season one?
It was him and the other two guys.
Yes.
The old episode where it's like, oh, yeah, it's a Black Lizard, the famous Death Squad of the Port Mafia, and then they just completely dispose of them.
So I'm thinking, was that another Dazai plan?
Was that a fake attack so that it was just like, oh, boss, I totally tried to attack him, but they kicked the shit out of me? And,
have the pair of them being co-conspiring right from the start.
Yeah, it does call a lot of shit like that into question.
Mm. Well, I'd say, with this threat of the guilds and needing to kind of form a partnership to work together, that may have more forced around it. So.
Yeah, but he does say to like Dazza, and he seems to be on his side with it, that he wants to protect the city.
Yes, because they're trying to make these two into a better team than Dazai and your other guy in Double Blackware.
Mm. Yeah, the Chuya.
Yeah. But yeah, they really kick the shit out of Fitzgerald, don't they?
Yes.
Although, that being said, he's fighting the two of them. It's 2-on-1.
Yeah, it is 2-on-1. He does have to spend all of his money so he can become like Super Saiyan God. And
Yeah. Lord Sobe's probably, you know, still alive somewhere with the sun falling into the ocean. And I think, who was this? I think Louisa May Alcott says they're going to try and find Mr. Fitzgerald.
Yeah, so I like the fact that Steinbeck turns out hated him, because that would make perfect sense. Like, why would John Steinbeck like a really rich guy, a rich capitalist?
Yeah, he's not happy. He's just like, fuck it, I'm going home.
Lovecraft's there too. He's like, hey, you're still alive, buddy. But you want to come with us? Nah, I'm done. I'm going to go for
now.
Sleep
I must
now.
Sleep for 1,000 years, jumps into ocean. It's like, what a weirdo, but he's my best friend.
I like the idea of a Lovecraftian entities. It's not like all they want to do is just sleep. They just want to sleep. They don't want to wake up and destroy the world. They just don't want their sleep disturbed.
That's kind of a fun way to look at it. It's like, look at it from the opposite way. It's like, the reason they're so fucking angry when you wake them up is because they like being asleep.
Like Beerus.
You've woken up a drunk alcoholic. They got a hangover. They want to go to sleep.
But yeah, they get the Yuri falls off. They think they've lost the the timer, but it turns out Akitagawa had already grabbed it. So they switch the whale off, but then it gets hacked and someone is returning it back to the ground. And so Kyoka has to use the drone she's in to crash into it and blow it up early.
And it's kind of like the thing of, it's like, hey, this is the only way we could do this. And he, obviously the kid is like really against that, but basically gets thrown out of the, I was going to say thrown out of the plane, thrown out of the whale with a parachute on.
Yes.
Yeah, that was kind of like, oh shit, that really sucks. That's kind of a downer, but it's until the chief's power is finally revealed.
Yes.
It's just, again, one of those confusing JoJo-esque kind of like, it's a little complicated. Mm. Let me just sit you down for a sec, walk you through it.
I like when they have these, you know, this is a cool power, but it has these like criteria attached to it. And
can only activate it under these circumstances. Yeah.
Yeah. So it can control other people's powers as long as they're members of the agency.
He can modulate their outputs or either increase it or decrease it, but they have to be in his employ, otherwise it won't work on him.
Yeah, and so that's how he got control over the were-tiger thing, and he can just pull that out whenever, and he's not wild and out of control. Exactly. And since your one sacrificed herself to save other people, that's passing the test. So she's in.
So she got out in the nick of time.
And we learn that the villain is a Russian hacker.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's a bit too,
too on the nose.
Yeah.
We learned that Melville used to be the leader of the guild.
I think that's the second time it's come up, isn't it?
Maybe I wasn't paying attention the first time then, in that case.
I thought he said something to...
I think he said something about the guild not being what it used to be.
Okay.
But I don't think they said that he was like the former leader.
Okay.
And he seems to have got his ability back at the end, because we see like a glowing whale.
Like fly after him,
flying around. And he's going to work with your guy from...
Government, yeah.
The government. I was going to say the guy from the boring opening arc, but...
Yes.
That actually does come up a little bit here with your man Dazai, but it's still totally skippable.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, and obviously we've got the...
The stinger at the end, yeah.
Oh, and also your man's working with the Russian guy in order to get the woman out of her coma.
What was the priest's name again?
Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Yes.
Hawthorne is working with Dostoevsky by the look of it.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. And I'm just like, so now they're like crossing, the authors are crossing over between different sides, as opposed to I'm on America's side because I'm an American author. They're just on whatever fucking side. I like how messy that's potentially going to be. Oh, and Poe is in the office now.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yes, because we have a party at the end.
Yeah, like gotta end it on a party. Feel good party.
Yeah, Poe shows up and they take photos with his raccoon. As you do. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. It was a lot of fun and made up for those first four episodes.
Hmm.
Yeah. It did really, really stuck the landing there.
Talking of sticking landings, literally part of the plot. Great segue, Dwayne. Yuri on Ice, episode 12. You gotta supercharge it. Sorry, supercharge it.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot how many supers.
Grand Prix final free skate, in which it's pretty much confirmed, as we suspected last episode, Dwayne. There's going to be another season or a film or something.
Yes. I'm fine with this.
Yeah, because they start mentioning all these other competitions which they've quietly kept in the background until now. Of like, oh,
did you know there's a lot, actually?
Yeah, it was great because one of them just info dumps it. Like, I think it's the Uzbekistani guy. I forget his name. The really cool guy. Is it relaxed? But he's like, oh.
I know what I mean.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm really looking forward to the four continents now. And it's like, wait, what does the four continents mean? And also there's another tournament. And it's like, oh, no, there's more, isn't there?
And of course, at the end, I'm not leaving you until you've won five gold medals.
Which is the correct answer, really.
At least five sequels, sure.
I got to admit, like, I like this ending a great deal, but like the end of the previous episode where like idiot main character Yuri goes like, oh, well, let's break up after this. It's like, oh, God damn it, Yuri, stop marking around.
I think that wasn't really like playing with emotions and shit. I think he was seeing the effect that Victor had on people, and he felt like bad for denying the world as a skater.
But I feel
see Victor like seeing like what had happened when he stepped out of skating. It like the world kept on spinning without him. All his records were smashed quite easily.
Yeah, it was quite interesting. I mean, the thing is, though, I feel like they toyed with that before in the series, but I think this is the case where they're like, okay, we've spun this plate before, and now we've got all these people, like, you know, like Yurio breaks his record in the first section and, like, all this other stuff that's happening, so everyone's breaking records. And, like, it's interesting because you can see that everyone comments on the lack of Victor now. It's leaving a vacuum in the sport, which, as mentioned throughout the entire series. And, like, I don't know, I just feel like Yuri did a real crap. I mean, to be fair, he's a social inept idiot, but, like, I feel like... the way he did that was the most utterly destructive way of doing it, of like, hey, I know we got sort of engaged, kind of, even though I'm an idiot in denial about it, and now I'm going to make you cry, and I want to see you cry, so I'm going to move your hair away so I can watch your tears fall.
I think I think he was just trying to when he saw how Victor had impacted skating, he wanted to give Victor back to skating. He felt like he was being greedy by holding him for himself, but he didn't think about how Victor felt about that.
No, not at all. I mean.
Yeah.
He's bad at doing that because he's selfish.
Well, I mean, like, he was trying to be selfless in letting him go, but it's kind of like, but Victor doesn't fucking want to be let go, so...
I would admit, I think the one thing they maybe will look at in another season is that there's still quite a lot of people that refer to Yuri almost, even though he wasn't like a 5-time gold medalist, like people refer to Yuri in that way, like cheer group kid who really likes him, and Pitchett like always refers to Yuri about his flashbacks and stuff, and his weird little Wonderland idea of making it like a skating theme park show thing.
Yes.
How good was that? It's like, oh.
But first of all, we get JJ's comeback,
kinda.
He takes
it's an emotional medal. Kind of comeback. Yeah,
he picks himself off the floor. I don't know. I think his fiancée deserves awards for like being a good, being a nice person and helping him.
We get a flashback to when he was Eric Cartman.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, that was the best.
And we also see that coach has been coaching loads of people this episode
and has had amazing different hair over the years.
I
did like that with JJ because it was kind of like, you know, the way like you don't like JJ, well, what if he was Eric Carmen? It's just like, we're just gonna, he's a dick, but they do make you go kind of like, and again, great direction of, you don't hate him at the end of this. Which is great, I think.
They have to, you know, they have to destroy him, but also build him back up again, because if they just destroyed him, that'd be really meaningless, like, as an actual character, like, examination. Yeah.
But even
like,
by the end again, he's back to being super vain.
Oh, no, he's still a prick, but...
Out of all those guys, I didn't want to see JJ win, but I did want to see everyone else win. Can everyone just win joint gold? That would be great. I love all these guys. They're great.
But say,
I do like where they show the ending when, like, you know, Yurio actually pips in the end and, you know, Yuri gets second. But I like the way it goes kind of quiet and just lets the, like, it turns into, like, commentator-less sort of just, here's the scoreboard, Yurio is, like, a point ahead.
It's so plain, exactly, because I was like, wait, what? You know, because it's allowing me to emotionally react to it.
Yeah, I really like that, because it's just like, hey, here's the scoreboard, here's the cold hard fact of who won when the judging is done, when the falls are taken into account, here's what happened, here's the medal ceremony for, like, 5 frames, and here's the actual bit you want to see, which is Yuri and Victor, like, having a weird ice side thing. So,
but I thought that was so wonderful after, like, you see Yuri's performance, which is, like, for the first time, absolutely fucking flawless. He lands every jump, he does everything he needs to do, and you see Yurio like breaking up and thinking that it's like, I've definitely fucking lost this, because he slipped at one stage, but he was doing all these other jumps at such an increased difficulty, he didn't figure out, it's like, oh wait, I'm just gonna make it up on the points, because he says like, I'll get you fucking next time kind of thing, and he breaks down crying because he's like, I've lost, I fucked it up, this was my last chance to do this kind of skating routine, and it's like, no dude, you totally fucking won. It happens so quickly like that. It barely gives you time to react.
It really works. It works really well with what the athletes know and don't know. Like, when you're on the ice, you don't know what the hell's going on anyway. So it's really, that's real fun.
We also get Christoph throwing jealous glances, which sort of upsets his performance.
Yeah.
And then we got Otterbeck just plowing straight through.
Yeah.
Oh, Otobek's great. I love that guy. He's great. He's just like late introduction. He's great because he's a late introduction to the cast. Mm. And he's like, I am here to win. Sod you all. Yes. I'm going to do my thing. Yeah. And he does. And then he finds a friend.
But the little bit of character depth they give him, like, I think the only emotional reaction he's given in the whole thing is like him clapping for the guy who is clearly fucking beating him and going to push him out of getting a medal.
But they're friends, so it's all
yeah,
right.
But yeah, but he wants to support his friend. And it's just like, oh, that's nice, even though you appear to be a cold, emotionless android the rest of the time.
Well, they had the entire moped scene.
That kind of set it up nicely.
He rescues Yurio from his crazy fangirls. And then they have their weird, terse anti-conversation on the lookout. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is great. You've totally... Because they figured out how much character depth they need to give that guy. Mm. And they've parceled it out rather than trying to cram a new character down your throat and go, oh, no, here's half an episode of his backstory. Meanwhile, so, yeah.
Sure. And this one feels even more like a sports show with the commentators and introductions.
Yeah.
Do you feel like maybe a little bit because of the structure of the way that the thing worked out for Yuri's program was right in the middle of it, and we see all these other guys to go to as well. That should have been more of a climactic thing, but we get right in the middle of the episode. Really, I mean, guys, got more to kind
see.
Of
I like that. I like the fact that it sticks to it, adheres to the format of the sport.
Exactly. Yeah, I think if they had him be the penultimate kind of thing, it would have been. And I think they did that to some extent by having Yurio be the last one on. But if they had the main character, the Yuri, be the last one, I think that would have been dramatic formatting rather than it's like, and fucking, let's see, Yuri's first.
Yeah, I much prefer it to like, the way they did it is because it's like, okay, we've got, because they're making the show within the bounds of the sport they're trying to show as straight as they can. Mm, if they started fucking around with it that way, then it's going to start collapsing.
Yeah, so I think that's its secret strength, is the fact that it's a sports anime, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then also, it's a comedy.
I think a lot of people have had a problem with it like that, where they're just like, whoa, why don't you just show them kissing and stuff? It's like, okay, like it is about relationships and people's emotional reactions and developments in that, but through the medium of ice skating, it's ice skating like at the forefront. Yeah. And it's through that lens the entire time.
It's also the fact that all the relationships are shown just as they are. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
That's the best part about it, is it shows all these relationships, and you look at them and go, like, some of these are a bit weird. Like, you know, brother, you know, the brother and Sala. It's like, okay. I mean, I noticed a thing as I marathoned through the series, is that, like, it's really weird where, like, the heterosexual relationships is the one that are generally on their face a bit weird, which... They're not. There's no judgment in the show, which is probably its greatest strength, because it doesn't try and go, look, it's wonderful, they're gay. It's like, no, they just get on with it. Like, they just get the hell on with it, and it's great. Because it's just like, yes, they're gay. What do you want? Like, come on.
It doesn't need to make that the forefront of the plot, because that's fucking obviously there the entire time. It's not subtle. It's
the engagement ring thing was not subtle at all. But it's also
no.
It doesn't, like, apart. Like, it tackles that in the best way possible, is his friend taking the piss out of him and putting it on fucking Twitter. It's like, that's what's
going to
happen.
Sure, sure.
But I think it's more so that, you know, there's different kinds of relationships. And
they
don't need all that here to, it's like, you don't need to have Victor and Yuri be saying, Victor, I love you. Oh, yes, Yuri, I love you too. And that kind of way. It's much, much more kind of low-key than that.
It's basically like you've seen, from everything you've seen, like, and all the, and it's not subtle about these signs at all. Like, it's like, yeah, they're fucking together. It's, they are a couple. That's
like, you're doing fucking spelled out for you. They spelled out for him somewhere, but there's no.
I was
going
to say it might need to be spelled out for Yuri, but
I think that's just him.
He is a highly self-defeating character. Like, I know people like that. It's very obvious. But yeah, I don't know. It does it all really well. And you know, like I say, it's, if there's another series, yeah, totally, I'll watch it. Go ahead, fine, make more, like, more skating.
Yep, I'm sure there'll be another something.
Yeah, apparently one of my friends is currently in Japan right now and has reported that every single store is picked clean of every last piece of tat of Yuri on Ice merchandise.
Of course.
Like, every single one. He said, yeah, there's not a bookmark or can badge to be found.
Well,
so.
Christmas, like, you know. If you're not getting it for you, you're getting it for someone else. But, yeah, do you think this is the most successful ending... I mean, like, maybe not out of just the ones we were talking about, but out of the season, or...
I don't think I've watched enough stuff from this season to say, but also I feel like the
fair enough.
I feel like the peak of the series was actually this series was the previous episode, episode 11, because of all the like the first program and the ring crap and all that. But I think this episode, I went into it with a bad taste in my mouth because I'm like, oh god damn it, Yuri, don't be a pillock. You're gonna be a pillock, aren't you? But I can't stop you. But
yeah. So I feel like maybe Yu-Yu got a little shortchanged because they were saying like, you know, if he does this. He will have, like, made like double, triple ice skating history, and it kind of blitzed past that a bit.
Yeah. I wonder if that's what's going to come up like in another season or something. You know what I mean? Because that wasn't the main emotional arc of the thing.
Yeah, at the same time, I'd say this episode was the first one where it felt like there was a longer cut of it. There were spots where it felt like there was bits cut out, particularly in Mirio's performance.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, I want to see him get like a first, because like, you know, he'll have his own personal thing to go to, because as I said, you know, he can't skate this way forever, so he had to maybe adapt to that. And he might have trouble adapting to, because he's been used to be doing this for so long right now that like, he's been the kind of guy who I can see can struggle about that.
I suspect that might where Otterbeck comes in because of his non-ballet influenced.
Yeah,
style.
Yeah, and it that's kind of like he's the opposite of Yuri in that regard. He doesn't have like this raw talent or something like that. It's just pure fucking work ethic that he's
and
had.
Also finding what works for him is the
exactly.
Other thing.
Yeah.
We sort of just kind of more got told that, you know, oh yes, Yuri has grown so much because of the friends he's made along the way, but that literally gets kind of related to us via a sort of like montage flashback thing, because we see he had a kind of a connection there with Yuri's old childhood friend who owns the ice rink, but then they never really comes up again. They just didn't get a phone call or anything about that. Or to Beck and him become friends immediately. It's like, I can see.
As much as we get of his relationship with her is like her reaction to his performance. Yeah.
I feel like, you know, like we're just told that he has grown because of his connections there, but we kind of see it so much. So I'd like to see him a bit more on that end. You know, see like a bit more of his thing, because he could be an interesting guy to follow, I think.
Sorry. But the main thing I want to see from Yuri in particular is that, like, when you look at it, it treats his like accomplishments plainly. But if they do another season, just think how insane it's going to be that he's going to be like.
He has so much expectation now.
He's now got probably one of the strongest cases of sophomore album like problem, where he's broken a world record. He's number
one. Broken three world records in his first fucking thing as a
senior debut.
He's still like 15, 16. He's still really young. He's still finding his own way. And like, he just won everything in his first season as a pro. And now it's like, well, what now? What the hell do you do now?
Get hit by puberty is what's going to happen next. I imagine.
His voice is going to implode.
They should just employ a different voice actor next season. He's got a much deeper voice. Norio Wakamoto.
What's the name of that guy? Elliot, you would know him, the guy who does Kure in Fate's Day and Night.
Oh man, yeah, you're a Kobe and all that. God. Or they could get Viral from Gurren Lagann. Robot dude.
I think it pays off well in a lot of ways. It sets itself up nicely for plenty of interesting things to happen, which I'm grand with because I've enjoyed watching ice skating so much through this. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're in the world of sequels now for anime. Rather, it seems to be people going for more and more for sequels rather than whatever the hottest light novel is.
Well, you got to guarantee that income.
Yeah.
Well, I think with this, it's like I'd be surprised if it wasn't picked up. It does seem like guaranteed income. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was an original idea.
Yep.
So
maybe it'll convince people to go like, maybe we should write stuff for anime.
Nah. I haven't said that. I mean, hey, but that story is entirely original.
At least at this point, it seems
for a toy, though. That's a different thing.
Yes, true. Yeah.
At least this time, it seems like maybe it won't be another 4 years before we get to our next. I think it's Sayo Yamamoto, the director of Yuri on Ice. It won't now be a 4 year lull before she appears again.
Well, of course, you're assuming that it's the same director as we're going to learn next year with Blockade Battlefront.
Yeah.
Well
done, like, to find the style and look at this show. Now get out of here. I've got to try and monetize this.
Well, to be fair, they've still got the same character designer and animation director. So I imagine the look will be similar. The direction will be different.
Questionable, yeah.
Hope Springs Eternal. Hope Springs Eternal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm still looking forward to it because there's loads of really good stories they haven't adapted yet. So I suspect they won't have the made for TV storyline that you could debate was good or bad in the first season of that.
Right.
Righty-ho, I think that wraps everything up for this year's Let's Go JoJo.
Hopefully not the last Let's Go JoJo.
Next year, if you want to hang with the Let's Go gang, we will pick back up Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime, where we left it all the way back in March. And if you can't get enough of us over the holiday period, well, check out our regular podcast at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com. uk-anime.net and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
Also, make sure to check out Let's Go Ho Ho.